human beings can declare bankruptcy really easily, but you cannot have a country declaring bankruptcy.
Welcome to Voices of Dignity, a UN Human Rights podcast series. I'm Kayloy Henry from the UN Human Rights Office. In the coming weeks, we will bring you in-depth conversations with thought leaders and experts looking at human rights issues and the future of human rights. In this episode, we look at how debt, particularly foreign debt carried by nations, impacts human rights with expert Atiya Waris. Since August 2021, Atiya Waris from Kenya has been the UN independent expert on foreign debt, other financial obligations, and human rights. She has a PhD in law, is a specialist in fiscal law, policy, and development, and teaches at the law school at the University of Nairobi, Kenya. Recently, we discussed foreign debt, human rights, and how these two disparate concepts are connected.
One of the things that I've always thought was, I come from finance from the perspective of taxation. And tax has a much more direct connection to financing human rights, which is that countries collect taxes from their people in order to make sure their people's lives are getting better, right? So that's an easier connection. But in reality, a country doesn't just have taxation. A country takes on business. So you'd find a country that has state-owned enterprises, for example. You find that a country has natural resources. So they own their oil and gas, or they own stones, precious stones. And so they make money off of that as well. And then the other limb is the one of debt, that they can take on debt in order to make certain decisions. However, when the debt is taken on, if it does not produce the profit that was expected, or the economy doesn't grow the way it was expected, then what starts to happen at that state level is that suddenly that infrastructure that was built maybe would not be completed, or it'll be built in not as good quality as it should have been, or actually then the country becomes cash-strapped. When a state cannot pay off its debt, one of the first things that starts to happen is a scramble inside the financial system of the country to find the money. This desperation, right, with no option of bankruptcy. So you can imagine, right, the parallels. And in that desperation, what the country does is it tries to take up as much of its foreign currency out of its economy as possible. That's because most foreign debt is in a currency other than your own, and often it is in US dollars. So you're basically scrambling to remove these dollars out of the economy. But that means that somebody might not have a job. It means that there may not be medicines in the hospitals. It means that there may not be enough teachers in the schools, because these are public sector services. And so you see a drop in the quality of the service while they're trying to juggle and shuffle and find the money in other places. And this is where a mandate like mine comes in, because what I then look at is alternatives to that scramble at the level of the human being, and the scramble to then make sure that the living standards don't go down. So take taxes from the people that can afford it more, make sure vulnerable still get protected, see which kinds of minimum cash transfers, for example, need to stay in place. Things that you absolutely should not mess with is where I come in, really.
Is there any such thing as a human rights friendly debt relief? I mean, what features of debt relief programs would be most beneficial in supporting human rights?
I can say that without doubt, unfortunately, that there is no such thing as a human rights debt friendly framework in the world today. I wish there was. But it doesn't exist. What should exist is that whoever the creditors are should actually take on those considerations, that human rights provisions should not be compromised, no matter what. And I mean, I was really happy there are permanent representatives in Geneva who, during my sessions in March, actually said things like that debt should not be allowed to compromise human rights. But the reality on the ground is that when an entity to whom you owe money demands it, you want to be honorable and pay it, whether you are a country or an individual human being. The whole world went through COVID. Everybody's economies were crashing and burning. So let's freeze debt payments, for example. So these are the sort of things that I try to point towards and push for globally so that the human life at the bottom, like it doesn't go further down. My biggest fear right now in the economy, the way it's rolling out globally, is that the poor are getting poorer.
So what sort of responsibilities do governments have, do international institutions have in creating these better human rights-friendly debt relief programs, or at least trying to make sure that in trying to collect your debt, that you are not harming the citizens at the bottom?
Within the human rights system at the United Nations, there is that obligation. The problem is that the international financial institutions don't have a human rights mandate. They don't have a commitment to actually rolling out a human rights approach to issues. And from a financial perspective, it's really important that we're able to say, no matter where the finances come from, certain things cannot be compromised. It's not in place. It should be in place. There should be no organization in the world right now or no private entity that should be able to turn around and say, well, we don't have a mandate to do this. So I always say people should put their money where their mouths are, because that's me. I'm looking at where your money is. And you can tell me that you have the best human rights in the world, and all I have to do is open up your budget and I will tell you how good your human rights are.
Tell me a little bit about your background.
I'm a lawyer by profession, and I remember studying tax law in my accounting qualifications, because I am a trained accountant as well. My doctorate actually was on linking human rights to taxation, because I could already see this sort of lack of commitment to money, and I could see that the power politics will say one thing about the ideals and will commit to it so easily. I have been working in tax and human rights for almost 20 years, I see the nuances more and more, but I also see how the financial decisions that are being made are a tool for oppression. If you put a little bit more tax on onions in one country where it's a necessity, people cannot eat food because the onions are too expensive and it's the most important part of their food. On the other hand, it'll be corn flour, right? It'll be maize, it'll be rice. And all you have to do is change the price by 5% and you will have a starving population. And I never let people forget this. It will be women and children who will starve first. It will be the people who have mental health issues who will not be able to afford their medication because it's so expensive. They will be the ones walking the streets first. When I walk through a country, I can tell the state of their economy by what kind of homeless people I find and what the price of food is.
From your point of view, 25 years from now, or even 5 years from now, what do you see? What, go into your crystal ball and what do you see? What would you like to see in terms of human rights and debt?
Well, I would like to see debt frozen when countries are in a human rights crisis. And it cannot just be one type of human rights. It has to be all of them. I mean, whether it is a fair trial issues, or it is right to vote issues, or it is food issues. The moment we allow money to become the tool to people's lives, then we will lose. We will lose every time. And so I would like to see debt being kept responsive to rights, always. And I think, at least from a financial perspective, we tend to sometimes, as finance people, we lose focus of, but why was the debt taken? Why was that international financial obligation undertaken? And it's always taken in order to improve the living standards. And I would like to see us committing finance to climate. Let's not just see pledges of finance. Let's actually see a nice thermometer, barometer somewhere, everywhere, in all entities, not where the pledge is, but where you've actually deposited money into a bank account. 25 years from now, I don't want to see hungry people. I don't want to see homeless people. And I think it's really important that that resource conversation, really, we deal with it and come at it from a perspective of kindness and sharing.
Great words to end this on. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you. Have a lovely day.
We've come to the end of this episode of Voices of Dignity, looking at foreign debt and human rights. I want to thank Atiya Warris once again for chatting with us. If you want to learn more about foreign debt, human rights, or learn more about the work of our special rapporteur, then please go to our website, www.ohcr.org/special-procedures. Next time, we look at the intersection of rights and culture with Epsi Campbell Barr, chair of the Permanent Forum on People of African Descent. I'm Kayloy Henry. Thanks for listening.